Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Immigration has always been a contentious and divisive issue in America, which is odd because America was built on immigration. It was made great by immigrants. Many of the nation's greatest inventors, innovators, entrepreneurs, philanthropists, they were immigrants or the children of immigrants. And there is a generation-to-generation cycle in the United States that can be summed up about immigration with folks saying, well, today things are different. These immigrants, they're not the same as my grandparents, or America is full now, or these immigrants are too different to become Americans. Well, is that true? Is immigration all that different today than it was 50 or 100 years ago? Ray Swadas hit the bricks to find out in his new book, We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century in Oral History. The veteran journalist and broadcaster traces the emerging demographics of the United States in the 21st century through in-depth interviews with immigrants from wide-ranging origins and experiences. And Ray, welcome back to The Source.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So I do want to start off by playing a clip. We're going to get deeper into the book, but I want to kick off with the news. And from last night's Democratic National Convention, lots of speeches, a lot of people talking. Immigration was part of what we heard. And this is what one speaker had to say.
Buenas noches, mi gente. My name is Carlos Eduardo Espina. And if two decades ago, when my parents immigrated to College Station, Texas, you told them that one day their son would reach 14 million followers on social media, graduate law school, and speak at the Democratic National Convention, they might not believe you. But this is the United States of America, the land of opportunities where anything is possible. I know this, because daily I interact with people who, like my parents, came to America to fulfill the dreams and ambitions that in their home countries were impossible. People who work hard, contribute to society, pay taxes, because yes, immigrants pay taxes, and love this country deeply. The same people Donald Trump wants you to believe are poisoning the blood of our country. This is dangerous, and it is outright anti-American. Because as Ronald Reagan, a Republican, once said, we lead the world because unique among nations, we draw our people, our strength from every country and every corner of the world. Reagan knew that welcoming immigrants is not a Democratic or a Republican value, it is an American value. To be pro-immigrant is to be pro-America.
So without being dragged into the political thicket, Ray, if we can, what's your reaction to this young man talking about immigration being an American value?
Well, it's nice to hear somebody with a big pulpit remind the country at large that immigrants pay taxes. They pay lots of taxes. And if you talk to the green eye shade people over at the Social Security Administration, they'll tell you about the billions of dollars paid every year that helps keep the system solvent. The speech that the speaker alludes to from Ronald Reagan, yes, That's what Reagan said. But very importantly, he also said that people from anywhere can become American. He noted that if you could move to other countries in the world, you could be there a long time and nobody would ever think that you are a Frenchman or an Englishman or Chinese. But if you come to America, you can become an American. And he, Ronald Reagan, noted that that was part of the great gift and genius of our system. And he's right. It was one of the final speeches he gave before vacating the office to be succeeded by his vice president.
To just to lay out the facts, the Institute on Tax and Economic Policy, they released a report about 3 weeks ago looking at taxes paid by undocumented immigrants. They say they paid $96.7 billion in federal, state, and local taxes in 2022. And then many of these people are not eligible to receive any of the benefits of these taxes that are paid into things like Social Security and other things. So, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And in the coming years, you know, there's a kind of cumulative effect to all of that. Paying into disability insurance when you can't collect disability, paying into unemployment insurance when you can't collect unemployment, paying into Social Security when you can't collect it, as the convention speaker alluded to. They don't qualify for many of the benefits they're funding with the taxes they pay. Yeah, it's a big deal.
Also, they're paying property taxes if they're renters, or you know, they're still paying their share. But why is that a fact that is so hard to communicate? Why is that so not easily known?
Well, I think a lot of the people who are agitating against immigration and immigrants are leaning hard into the notion that they come with their hands out because they want free things, they want something for nothing, they want to take advantage of the affluence and bounty of the United States to make themselves better off, but have no allegiance to the country. And one of the ways you lean into that story is by stressing the fact that these people take more than they give. Talk to business people, however, who employ immigrants, and they'll tell you that part of the reason that their business is profitable is because of their employees. So, you know, we if you want to tell one side of the story, you lean on maternity wards and public schools and public welfare programs. If you want to tell another story, you might elide and choose your facts carefully and only talk about the benefits. But really, the truth is always somewhere in the middle.
And we hear a lot about how immigrants are bringing crime to the United States. We can talk more about that when we come back from this break and some of these other talking points as we continue our conversation with Ray Suarez. He's a visiting professor of political science at New York University in Shanghai. He's the co-host of the podcast and public radio program World Affairs. He covers Washington for Euronews. He's the author of a new book, We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century, an oral history. And of course, he's a familiar voice to veteran public radio listeners for 6 years. He was the host of Talk of the Nation. And we're going to take a break and we'll come right back. Our phone lines are open. You've got a question, a comment, want to talk about immigration. All voices are welcome. I mean, if you think this is an echo chamber, We'll change that. Call in and tell us what you think. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line is Ray Suarez. His new book is We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century, an Oral History. We're talking about immigration. You can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Now, to bookend the clip that we heard earlier from the Democratic National Convention, this is a clip from the Republican National Convention. This is from an immigrant himself, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Let's give a listen.
Never before has an election mattered so much. We are facing an invasion on our southern border. Not figuratively, a literal invasion. 11.5 million people have crossed our border illegally under Joe Biden. Look around you. This arena holds about 18,000 souls. Now imagine 639 arenas just like this, filled to the brim. That is 11.5 million people, larger than all but eight states in the nation. But the numbers don't show us the true price that our country is paying. Every day, Americans are dying, murdered, assaulted, raped by illegal immigrants that the Democrats have released. Teenage girls and boys wearing colored wristbands are being sold into a life of sex slavery.
Just a quick fact check here. Ted Cruz is not including, he's saying these are illegal people who are coming into, illegal documented people coming in. Many of these people are asylum seekers, and therefore they have gone through a process, and they're not undocumented, they're not illegal immigrants. Also, he doesn't count the high number of deportations that we've seen in the United States under Biden, which surpassed the number of deportations under Trump. So he's only giving, his version of events to satisfy his political objectives, right?
Well, David, saying it that way is meant to give the impression that all 11.5 million people are right here in El Paso, in Tucson, in San Diego. And now, courtesy of buses and trains, also in Chicago and Washington, D.C. and Boston. That's not the case, as you note. And to go on to make it sound like these people have set off a crime wave, it's almost grotesque, the lurid way he describes that, because Ted Cruz knows, as people who are serious students of law enforcement and the judiciary in this country know, that foreign-born people commit crimes, violent crimes included, at a lower rate than native-born people, are less likely to come to the attention of police or of the judiciary system. They are staying out of the way, enforcement authorities, because they don't want to keep their head over the over the fence and get caught, get deported, get tried, get detained. They are more law-abiding. They are less likely to commit a violent crime. Have they committed violent crimes? Yeah, it's undeniable because people are people. And in a pool of 100,000 people, any 100,000 people, certainly some of them are going to be criminals. But to talk about sex slavery and murder and rape when he knows how generally law-abiding this population is, and at a time when violent crime is decreasing in the United States, is lurid, grotesque, and meant to be so.
Let's go to a caller. The number is 833-877-8255. We'd love to hear your take on what's happening with immigration right now and how it's being used in our political world. Let's go to Deborah on the line. And Deborah, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a sixth-generation Texan. I never thought I'd ever want to leave Texas, but right now I am so embarrassed at the way Texans and Governor Abbott are dealing with our immigration. I'm also a 35-year-old retired educator. I worked on the south side of San Antonio. I dealt with immigrant families every single day. And I'm going to tell you, those immigrant people might not have had a lot of money, but they got their children to school every day. And if we needed to contact them, they were there. What do you need? What can I do? And they were also the last people to get help from us. Whereas I had children who lived in generational poverty, who have lived in San Antonio all their lives, their grandparents, and they were the first in line to get handouts. And so it makes me very, very angry when people make comments about the immigrant families who come here for a better life for their children. And I have seen those children succeed, and I have seen those children become very productive citizens, and they always give back to their community.
Mm-hmm. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for your call. Ray Suarez, do you want to react to that?
Well, it brings up an interesting part of the story. Our caller notes how diligent these families were about getting their kids to school. One thing that Latinos particularly agree upon is that their children have to learn English to be able to operate in this society, to be able to succeed in this society. Language acquisition among Spanish-speaking immigrants is going ahead at about the same pace as previous generations of immigrants from other places in the world. It's not different. There is no illusion among Spanish-speaking immigrants that they can simply go on speaking Spanish without mastering the language. Now, what's the big variable here? The age at which you arrive in the country. If you're 8 when you get here, as a lot of DACA recipients were, by the time you're 30, you largely speak in the regional accent of the place where you did most of your growing up. If you come at 22, you will speak English with a Spanish accent for the rest of your life, unless you are an uncanny mimic with a terrific ear. And you can even hear it in the speakers speaking before the convention. These are things we know and have known for a long time. Immigrant families are desperate for the kinds of things that they couldn't get back in their home country. And one of those things is an education. Or, in the case of immigrants from certain places in the world, they knew their terrific educations would not take them very far in India, in Senegal, in many other places. So they move here knowing that that BS in computer science, that BA in mathematics or physics, will get when it couldn't, because their own societies lacked the capacity to allow them to move very far ahead. So, you know, education, vital for immigrants, and the best educated immigrants from anywhere in the world coming to the United States are Nigerian. And it's funny because Donald Trump speculated that they stay because they don't want to go back to their huts. They don't live in huts. They're university graduates. They're more likely to have PhDs than people from any other place in the world.
I did an audio project earlier this year. I went to a local high school to work with recent migrant children. And to help them do a project to document what, you know, their experience are. And this was a high school that a heritage high school in San Antonio, back in the day of segregation. This was the Mexican high school that, you know, the other high schools were white and this were black, and this was the Mexican high school. And now when I was walking down the hallway, you see it's not, you know, you can still see all the artifacts from, you know, celebrating the Mexican heritage, but the students' population completely different. They're coming from Central America and also Afghanistan and parts of Africa, and the chatter in the hallway very different than anyone. And this is, and they're going through high school, getting the high school experience, playing football, playing volleyball, and becoming Americans.
You know, I wish we could look at what's happening on the southern border as America's share of a worldwide crisis. This is the biggest economy in the world by far, the richest country in the world by far. And if we thought we were going to escape what's going on borders around the world with desperate people fleeing genocide, fleeing starvation, often driven by climate change, fleeing new governments that want to persecute various ethnic, religious, linguistic minorities. If we thought we were sort of going to blithely float above this worldwide crisis and it would never come for us, well, we were being realistic, unrealistic. Those people at the border are from China. They're from West Africa. They're from Cuba. They're from Venezuela. They are leaving countries offering with cratering economies and cratering possibilities in the future, just like those people who are washing up on shore in Turkey and Greece and Italy and France. We are now part shareholders in a worldwide refugee crisis. That's how our leaders of both parties should have been talking to us about it, instead of making it sound like everybody's coming for free stuff or muttering about military age males as if there's some sort of underhanded national security threat going on. It's really reprehensible.
Let's go to Daniel on the phones. And Daniel, you're on the air. Daniel, are you there? Oh, we just lost him. But in the comments from the producer, he says people who seek asylum don't have a choice but to enter illegally, or they're not entering illegally, but they're crossing the river and they're approaching the Border Patrol. And so they are seeking, you know, salvation in the United States.
Yeah, we've, by collapsing these different kinds of people into each other and making them into an undifferentiated horde, we've really done a disservice for a country that has to figure out what to do next. There are people trying to sneak in. That's one group of people. There are people going to recognized border stations and basically crossing and saying, here I am, and showing their papers and declaring their identity and declaring their nationality. They want to be processed, and they're very different from people who are trying to sneak in and evade detection. They want to go through the system. They want a hearing in front of a magistrate. And that's what a lot of the big numbers driving these new asylum claims are all about.
And did you come across many people like that who are asylum seekers in your reporting?
Well, one guy I spoke to, you'll be interested in this, David. My editor said, well, yeah, you've spoken to refugees, and that's great, and the refugee stories you have are terrific. But this, we were speaking at the time of the meltdown of Afghanistan. You should really get an Afghan refugee because they're the newest kids on the block. And I set about trying to locate an Afghan refugee family that would talk to me on the record and for attribution. And it was really difficult because their status here was so insecure and so temporary, and they were so worried about people back home in Afghanistan that they were still trying to get out of the country, that they were very, very afraid to talk to me, even when I had people vouching for me, saying, you know, this guy's reliable, he's trustworthy, he's a good guy. And I agreed in all these cases to give them assumed names so that neither American immigration authorities nor the Taliban would know who they were. And it took me months till finally a former officer in the Afghan Air Force, trained by the United States military, living in Southern California and struggling to get the rest of his family out of Afghanistan, finally agreed to talk to me. Amjad was wonderful. He's going to be a net contributor to our country. And, you know, he sacrificed his security to join with American forces when we invaded Afghanistan in the early part of this century.
Right. I got to take a break here, Ray. We're going to continue our conversation with Ray Suarez, talking about his book, We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century, an Oral History, right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line is Ray Suarez. You know his voice from 6 years of being on Talk of the Nation on NPR, and he's also the co-host of a podcast and public radio program, World Affairs. He has a new book, We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century in Oral History. If you want to give him a call, question or comment, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Ray, as we talk about people entering the country without authorization, of course, many people immediately think about the southern border, and that's the, you know, the concern. But in actuality, many more people enter the country through expired visas. They fly into the country with a temporary visa, then they stay longer. I mean, how does that change things when we recognize that fact?
Well, it would make our enforcement, I think, different and more effective. There wouldn't be so much attention focused on border jumpers, you might say, when in fact it's people coming in through the nation's major airports who come in legally with a specified time that they're allowed to be in the country, and they simply disappear into the woodwork, the great grain of the United States. Somewhere out there are these hundreds of thousands of overstays, and they dig themselves into local economies, they find work, they find contacts, they find a community, and they get going with their American lives. Those people often spend a fortune and years trying to get legal, but that's how they begin their undocumented journey in the United States, on an airplane, not on a inner tube floating across the Rio Grande and trying to avoid razor wire.
I have an email. The email address is concernedcitizenusa1976. It's a long email. I'm just going to read the first part of it. Hispanics are proof that immigrants do not ever assimilate and only care about their own kind over America's rule of law. Folks need to return to their homelands if they want to live in a lawless nation. Americans were beaten, jailed, and murdered for the lives of laws. We the people have won! Exclamation mark. Most American cities have devolved into third world Latin American cities thanks to the influx of legal and illegal immigrants since 2020. And it goes on like that. But, you know, American cities are the great economic story of the United States, where that's where all the jobs and you know, new incomes are developed. So I don't know about that. But this idea, so the Hispanics, it's kind of a broad term, seeing how we have Hispanics, you know, living here in Texas, and they've been here longer, their family's been here longer than there's been Texas. So I'm not really sure what he means by that. But Ray?
Certainly in the demographic change that we've seen in this country in the past several decades, Latinos have come from a small percentage to a much larger percentage of the overall population of the country. The majority of Latinos in the United States are native born and English speaking. Yes, they are largely metro area residents, but they're not only metro area residents. But, you know, if this, and I'm assuming it's a he, maybe it's not. If this person wants to assume that all cities are Spanish-speaking hellholes, he really ought to get out more. I spend most of my time in big American cities just in the last several weeks. I've been in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle. After we finish our conversation today, I'm going to head up to New York. I live in a major metropolitan area, Washington, D.C., and you know, and I'm also an arguably assimilated Hispanic. So I think I can speak with a little authority about what's going on in that great big brown mass of 63 million people, multilingual, multiracial, multinational population that's creating an identity on this side of the border that it didn't have back in its home country. There's no such thing as a Latino when you're talking about in Mexico. People say, hey, we're Mexican, and they're right. In the United States, a different kind of identity is being forged. And I think the emailer, in short, is off the mark and should go to places like Queens, New York, and parts of the greater LA basin to see a refutation of what they're talking about in that message.
Let's go to a phone call, 833-877-8255. We'd love to hear your take on immigration and assimilation in the United States. Let's go to Tom. And Tom, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to, I think it's worth noting that there's a huge difference between immigration from the 1800s and into the early 1900s. They came and, you know, what's going on now is it's just a flood. It's out of control. Early in they had worked. The infrastructure was, you know, we had railroads and bridges and roads. These immigrants are coming in now and they're just hanging around at hotels and airports and stuff. So what are they going to do here? Where's the work? It's
hot. Tom, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Race Waters.
I think he makes a good point. You know, those people, Tom, would not be hanging around hotels if we gave them the ability to work. Because the gears of our national legal system and our legislative system have seized up over politics, the large number of people in Midtown Manhattan, many of them from Venezuela, many of them shipped north by southern governors, would be working already. They want to work. They're dying to work. And it is the inability of our national legislature to respond to an emergency that is making their lives even more miserable than they would be otherwise. Yes, this is an emergency. You're right. But, you know, it was portrayed as an emergency in the late 19th century, too. That much hasn't changed. The arrival of people from Ireland and Italy and from the Tsarist Empire and from the German principalities, these were all portrayed as crises that America couldn't handle. And guess what? We handled it every time.
I think about Tammany Hall in New York City, and it got its start as a nativist anti-immigrant club, a grouping. And then it switched over and began to recruit and empower Irish immigrants, and that it used that for its political power base. When it saw the winds of change. And I wonder if that is what the future looks like for the Republican Party. Today, as we heard Ted Cruz ranting about immigrants at the border and all the crimes they commit, they're going to have to eventually deal with the demographics that are already baked into the United States and figure out a way to find a base there.
Why not? The Republican Party has accidentally or intentionally become the white party in America. And at a time when the country is less and less white, that may not be the best strategy. But right now, that's where they are. If you've got Stephen Miller whispering into Donald Trump's ear about the way to slam on the brakes and stop the immigrant future, you are not yet contributing to the rethink that many in the Republican Party have been talking about for decades, including Jeb Bush and Southern governors who said, look, we're missing a bet here. This could be our future. They are instead leaning into the idea of a white American nationalism that doesn't seem at all conscious of what's changing in this country.
What changed for immigration in 1965?
The percentage of the population that was foreign-born declined to a historic minimum in the 1960 census. 5%. One out of 20 Americans were born somewhere else in the world. Compare that to 13 and 14% in the 1900 and 1910 censuses. And in the face of that, and a tightening Cold War, a rapidly growing economy, and rapidly rising labor shortages, to the pleas of some of his congressional allies and thought that this was a bad look for the United States. As a relic of the 1920s, we had a series of laws that gave preference to immigrants from Europe and really made it hard to come in from other places in the world. As a relic of the teens, we had a system that made it so that even if you got here from Asia, you couldn't naturalize and become an American citizen. And those laws had served the purposes of their times, you might say, but they were outmoded, outdated, and not really fit for purpose in a worldwide battle against the forces of communism. And so LBJ and his supporters on the Hill forged the 1965 Immigration and Nationality Act. Teddy Kennedy was one of its great champions on Capitol Hill and helped get it passed. In many ways, we're living in Teddy Kennedy's country, living in Teddy Kennedy's reality. And it changed the quota system so that you could come into the United States more easily from other places in the world besides Europe. And we are living in the country that's been bequeathed to us by that 1965 law. Tremendous change. And now we are home to South Asians and East Asians, large numbers of Buddhists and Hindus.
Right, and, all because of that in 1965. The book is We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century, an Oral History. More with Ray Suarez after this break. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davis speaking with Ray Suarez. His new book is We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century, an Oral History. So, Ray, you went to Houston. Who did you meet there?
I was in the Dallas metro area and speaking with members of the South Asian community there. When I was in Houston, I was talking with a young EMT named Jesus Contreras, who is a deferred action for childhood arrivals. He came to the country when he was 7 years old and was only able to get a driver's license, attend public university get his training as an EMT because of DACA. And he saves people from buildings. He extracted sick and dying people during COVID. He helped out during the hurricane. He feels like he's paid his dues for consideration.
Yeah, he's a contributing member of society.
That's what he says. And he says, I wasn't able to attend my own dad or my grandfather's funeral in Mexico. I would like to be a normal person and just cross the border to go visit relatives or go lay on a beach somewhere in the Caribbean with my girlfriend. And I can't leave the country because I can't be sure that I would be able to get back in. He has spent the very life in Texas. Houston, a decent place to live. He just wants a little love in return.
Didn't seem that unreasonable.
Not to me. He is an example of one of those taxpaying, working members of society who I think people who would like to see deported. They're DACA kids. If we went by what most Americans want to see happen with them. But so far, the politicians who represent those same Americans will not get them off the ledge. And they remain in periodic, episodic danger of going out of status every time the emergency legislation comes up for a rethink. This was done by executive order. It should have been a law a long time ago.
Let's go to a caller, Annette, 833-TPR-TALK, if you want to join in. And Annette, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering if state and national leaders are aware of not only the supposed illegal immigration of Hispanics, quote unquote, but the infiltration of the Russian mafia, the Eastern European mafia, and the Chinese-controlled population, meaning the Chinese government-controlled population that has found their way into the United States. I believe that there should be a path to citizenship. However, the infiltration of these others that are not just Hispanic, but who have a great influence on the way things occur in this country. I am tired of the vilification of Hispanics. We've been here many, many, many generations. I am sick and tired, and I will never, ever vote Republican.
Okay, Annette, thank you so much for that. But so Ray Suarez, the idea, I mean, some would say it could be a trope that we have organized individuals sneaking into the country from Eastern Europe or from China or whatever, you know, and that we should, that's one reason why we should be careful here.
Look, our system is too slow, too cumbersome, too complicated, too expensive, and does not meet the needs of real people. And once things grind to a halt, you know, it's not unusual to talk to somebody who's been trying to get into the country and regularize their status legally for 11, 12, 13 years. I spoke to one immigrant the other day who said he would like permanent resident status, but he's an Indian national, and it would take him literally, with the current quota, 100 years to be just another green card holder. So that cumbersome system incentivizes lawbreaking, incentivizes getting around the system, doing an end run. And, you know, it's as old as the country that criminals and wrongdoers of various kinds and of various varieties come with a large number of immigrants. So, you know, the black and white gangster movies of the 1930s weren't about Mexicans. They were about people from other places in the world. The rum runners coming across the Great Lakes with whiskey from Canada were not Mexicans. Yes, there are Chinese fraudsters and people exploiting work contracts and holding people in a kind of indentured servitude. There are people from Russian-derived organized criminal gangs in the Northeast and in the South. Yeah, I mean, that just happens. We didn't kick out every Italian after Al Capone went to prison. And we didn't kick out every Eastern European Jew when Meyer Lansky was being sought by the FBI. And neither are we should we tar every Chinese immigrant group with being riddled with organized crime, or suspect every Russian of doing credit card fraud using multinational computer scams. It's the nature of crime in the 21st century. And of course, there are no shortage of Latin Americans who are willing to sell drugs to Americans who want to use drugs. And yeah, it's part of the story. I think we should be careful that we don't exaggerate the place in the story that it takes.
And FBI statistics and Border Patrol customs statistics show us that the people who are most likely to bring fentanyl into the country across the border are Americans.
Yes, U.S. nationals at designated border crossings.
So that's something to be thinking about. Let's go to Cynthia on the phones. And Cynthia, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes. There's been several lawyers who've been saying that they can help these immigrants with their papers, and the outcome, they come out and say that, oh, we can't help in the long run after they've taken 8,000, 6,000 from these immigrants trying to do everything legally, but the lawyers have been taking their money and not helping them, stating that they can help them, and then they don't answer their phone calls, they don't return phone calls. And it's just very stressful for these immigrants who are trying to do everything legally in this, the way everybody in the news wants them to do, but they don't talk about all these lawyers that are just taking their money.
Cynthia, thank you so much for that call. I do appreciate you bringing that up. So we have people who are seeking to get their papers and become legal in the United States, and they find they're not – some of these aren't even really lawyers. They're paralegals, but they're able to claim that they are, and they're basically they run a scam, right?
And they're on the same community that gave birth to them. These are – Latinos scamming Latinos and Central Asians in Queens, New York, scamming Central Asians. There's a special place in hell for those people. But it also is something that understandably grows up out of a system. It's the fruit of a system.
Yeah, it springs from the desperation illegible. Of people.
Yes. If you've been trying to do it the right way for 3 or 4 or 5 years and somebody tells you, I can do this for you, you might be desperate enough to start giving them a lot of money before you realize you're not getting any results.
So you talked about, you know, the executive order for DACA and that we need real immigration reform. Democrats have held out for comprehensive immigration reform that includes a pathway to citizenship. That has just not happened. I don't know what the world's going to look like in November. But is that too much to ask? Should we be trying to get this done in piecemeal? Because otherwise, we've had nothing.
Democrats are afraid that if they try to do it piecemeal, they'll get some early victories, some low-hanging fruit, and then get nothing else. Republicans are unwilling to concede any ground on this issue that doesn't involve a punitive approach toward people who've broken the law in the past by coming into the country. And we're kind of stuck. Comprehensive immigration reform is simply too heavy a lift given a 50-50 country, because neither side is willing to give ground on what seems to be foundational principles for both Republicans and Democrats. And in that kind of stasis, you get nothing. Could the DACA kids have gotten relief a lot sooner? Sure, they could have. That's one of the easiest ones. We saw another Joe Biden allowing people who are in mixed status marriages to get legal status for the out of status spouse. That's a good step forward, but it's not durable and could be overturned by the next Republican president. If Donald Trump prevails in November, he could simply say, look, we're not going to do that. And the process will come to a halt for hundreds of thousands of people. So I think comprehensive immigration reform, given the realities of current American politics, just too much to ask. But doing nothing is not on the menu either. And that's where we're stuck right now.
Ray Suarez is a visiting professor of political science at New York University in Shanghai. He's the co-host of the podcast and public radio program World Affairs. He covers Washington for Euro News, and he's the author of the new book, We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century in Oral History. You heard him for 6 years on NPR's Talk the Nation. And Ray, always great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.